Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass today, keeping me on time and on target, as well as throwing in some great insight and wisdom from behind the glass. Good morning, Matt. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. How are you?
Really good. Today's this is a big, important week.
Well, let's start off with how big and how important is it, because you were part of a minor earthquake yesterday as far in terms of regional transportation. No, you are not responsible for the haboob. I always think that people in Phoenix say, well, Tucson can't hold their weather. You know, Tucson's a bunch of lightweights. We can't hold our weather. But you were part of a big news event for the region that happened yesterday.
Oh, it's something a long time coming. Very grateful that the RTA board was able to all come together and get a unanimous vote on a plan and forward that to the County Board of Supervisors. You mentioned that in the lead-in, that they get the opportunity to vote. It's really administrative in most efforts.
I got to admit, they got their three. I mean, I can point to three votes I know they have.
It is one of those things, is the RTA, and I think most people understand that the RTA is an authorized taxing authority by the state of Arizona. So therefore, if they come forward with a legal, compliant plan and request to put something on the ballot, in theory, the county is supposed to put on. No different than if citizens collect enough signatures to put something on the ballot. It's not, the county's not supposed to debate whether that, what the citizens want to put on the ballot or not, using the legal authority that they have in the state statutes and laws. The county just says, okay, we'll hold the election because you've complied with everything you need to. Kind of the same thing with the RTA. It's a taxing authority authorized by the state legislature. As long as everything's been done legal, in theory, the county's just supposed to say, okay, it's all in order, let's forward it to the ballot. So all indications, there's very little chance there won't be a vote next March for the RTA. Your mic.
Thank you.
Hey, I've never had to say that. You had to correct. That's a first.
So it doesn't have to be a 5-0 vote?
No, it doesn't have to be a 5-0
vote. I can point to three votes for sure.
So. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it will be a 5-0 vote, because when you get...
I mean, Hines isn't going to vote for his own plan, and then you've got Christie and Rex, so I'm sure that you got three votes easy.
And when you get every mayor, all the municipalities...
Yeah.
It was a unanimous vote coming out of the RTA. I think it would be a poor form and really wouldn't favor anybody who was to say no, because then you're saying, okay, so you're going to ignore every other leader in the region?
It gets back to the conundrum that Juan Siscomani found himself in a few years ago, a couple of budgets ago, when as a member of the Appropriations Committee, he can't really vote to torpedo his own
appropriations.
His own plan,
that's so. One of the challenges. And that's some of the bullets that get lobbed at him. Sorry, I should not use the term bullets, but that's the way people...
Rhetorical
bullets. The stuff people throw at him is, well, how can you support that? That's not very Republican. Well, that's part of appropriations. It's part of a negotiation. It's part of getting things across the line and getting a plan, or a budget in his case, that goes across. But we're going to have a busy day today, Matt. We've got Joe Winfield, who's the current chair of the Regional Transportation Authority. He'll be coming on with at 7:30 to talk about some of the challenges we've experienced over the last couple of years to get it to where it is. Yeah. And also, we're going to talk about what's going on in Oro Valley. I think with all this emphasis on the RTA, a lot of what's going on in these municipalities has kind of taken second wind, unless you're the city of Tucson. One obviously still gets in the press, but a lot of the smaller municipalities have a lot going on right now. So Joe's going to join us. Juan Siscomani will join us at the top of the hour, and he'll talk about how his stay here is and during what he expects to find in D.C. when he goes back. And then at the bottom of the second hour, Tim Timur, the city manager of the city of Tucson, will join us to kind of talk his journey through not only Project Blue, but also the RTA and the items and issues that are now coming up. It never slows down in that city manager's position. There's no doubt there's always something going on.
Indeed.
But you know, the real reason this is a great week?
Yes.
It's fantasy football week.
Okay.
This is the week that the 30 million people who are playing fantasy football okay. are bearing down and starting to draft teams.
Okay.
And I did a little research last night trying to see how I would set this conversation up and talk about the length of fantasy football, because
didn't have this on my bingo card for today, but let's go.
I knew that one. I've got to keep you on your toes and take you somewhere. Yeah. But I'll be going to Colorado this weekend.
That's right. I'd forgotten about the annual pilgrimage.
With yes. the annual boys trip, a lot of golfing, some cold beverages for sure.
And then we
draft the fantasy football league. So when I was looking at it last night, we always claim, and we is loosely, the guys who started this league started in 1978. They were juniors in high school.
Really?
1978. We believe, and we've actually had Rick Riley and some of those confirm it with Sports Illustrated, they believe it's the longest running fantasy football league with all of the original owners. And there's a key. When you start something young, people who are older that start things, well, some of the owners may not. And so far, knock on wood, we're all still living.
You said 78?
78, they started it. I joined in 85. There's only two of us that didn't go to high school together. And this is what keeps them together. And
so how big is this group?
14. There's 14 teams, which is a huge league for doing it. Whole bunch of old traditions that are still in place, you know, rules, things. Very slow to come into the electronic world. For a long time, we banned computers at the draft. You couldn't have them, so you could only have your paper, you know, your paperwork and stuff. All in all, it's just a great time. And for those of us who are, you know, burnout wannabe athletes, fantasy football is a moment that you can sit there and every week you're competing. Every week you got something to watch on. It takes watching football to a different level. But don't get me wrong, I will always be cheering for the Los Angeles Rams versus my fantasy football team.
Okay, that's all right.
And I try not to stack them with Rams too, because then then it's like double disappointment if things don't go good during a week. So, but I'll be off this weekend, and I'll be back with stories on Tuesday. I promise everybody we won't talk about fantasy football on Tuesday, but I wanted to just
You're going to get here next Tuesday. You're going to get here at 6:30, and we're going to talk about the stories that you're not going to talk about on the air. Those are the ones that I want to hear.
Yeah, those sometimes can be the good ones. Generally, it's all woeful.
Colorado Springs and Ted Maxwell.
Yeah.
Even going back further than fantasy football.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, it's funny because it was the academies how I ended up getting in this league, because I met one of the guys from Boulder that came down. These guys all grew up in Boulder, but he was at pilot training with me at Williams Air Force Base, and he's talking about this thing, and I'm going, what are you talking about? Had no idea about it. And a year later, I took a trip to Vegas with them for the draft. They needed a couple more people. They had some guys from their high school that wanted to get in it, but they didn't show up. And you know, being present, it's a story in life.
Yes.
If you're present, you tend to get what
Isn't
you want.
The truth?
And I was there. So I ended up getting in the league in 1985, and I've every year been since then. This will be year number 40.
So I was just assuming it was a Southern California thing, but is cool.
No, it was all Colorado stuff. So it's very interesting, makes for a lot of fun, and they're just great guys. And I'll tell you, having the military career I did, one of the great things for the opportunity to vent, and even in the current career, is every Labor Day I can go and just hang out with a bunch of guys that just want to have fun. We all catch up a little bit, and it's all about this silly game, but it's a lot of fun. So
that is awesome.
Well, that's enough of that excitement on fantasy football. But for all those of you out there that are listening that are fantasy football people, good luck. Remember, running backs are a premium. Get your team, and most importantly, enjoy the process and the people you're doing it with.
There you go.
So, all right, Matt, let's cut to a break. When we come back, we've got a couple issues that we did talk about this morning that you are expecting to hopefully talk about. And we'll hit on some of the things other not called RTA that are going on in our community. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And I guess Springsteen's made
Ted,
his way
back. I was going to tell you, I was saving this. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary, the 50th birthday of Born to Run, the album.
And there was an article that went out, incredible depth on it, and such an amazing, amazing album,
amazing
songs.
I saved this for you today.
Matt, I greatly appreciate
it. For us, because I'm on board with this too. So.
There we go.
Yeah. We'll
All right, we'll be right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. And Matt, I appreciate you bringing up this being the 50th year of Born to Run.
We're going to go through the album today, Ted.
I can truly enjoy that. And that may have been the longest run out of music we've had in a long time. But you know what? It was just building. It was just building. You had to keep it going. So I appreciate it. And this was the first album I ever bought.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's got a lot of meaning to me. I was lucky enough to see Bruce 2 years ago in Wrigley Field. That was a great event. I've seen him a couple times throughout the years, but it's just something about. I mean, you talk about what a professional musician he is and what he's gone through and all the different types of music he's played over time, and still doing it successfully, releasing more albums. I mean, it's just an incredible career.
Yeah.
Incredible performer.
And to me, just the album rock phase of his, from Greetings from Asbury Park through Born in the USA and even Brilliant Disguise, the Tunnel of Love, the record after that. That was quite a run he had there, but he certainly delved into pop and got back to his folk roots. And all sorts of good stuff. Did a couple soundtracks.
He went back to a little bit more of the rock phase after The Rising, right after 9/11, his response to that. And that was that again. So sure. Just enough. We've talked about Bruce and some of the political ideals he's got and where he goes and what he's. There's a lot of things, but as a core of his musician, and when I think for the country when he needs to stand up, he does. And so that's just.
So
not to dive down.
That's, a mutual friend of ours called Sunday morning and said, "Hey. The Springsteen New Nukes, No Nukes concert is on Channel 6. So flip that on, and immediately took me back to 79 when the guy was in his prime. He's just, he was gearing up for the River Tour, sort of the end of the Darkness on the Edge of Town tour and going into the River songbook. And just as I watched, I said, well, we were all young once, right? I wasn't on board with the cause they were espousing in those series of concerts. A lot of very talented musicians made a lot of good music at those shows. And it was really, really fun to watch. And of course, I'd already kind of in the back of my mind thought about the Born to Run anniversary. So I think I knew we were going to do that today anyway. So just I had a good Springsteen weekend, I guess.
I appreciate it, Matt, because you said, me when we started working together on the show, it was Springsteen, all Springsteen, a lot of Springsteen, and I backed off, giving you the musical capability, and you made my day. This is a good week. Everything so far been good. Mm-hmm. Now we did talk. There are some things that are going on locally that I think concern both of us. And last week we talked about the county attorney's decision to only give it a year and a half, mm-hmm. and then probation,
allowing the guy to plea down and. I understand plea deals. Okay, I understand that.
And for everybody, this was the
it was the guy that was going to shoot up the guy that intended to and said he intended to shoot up a school on the east side of Tucson.
Correct, Legacy School out there, and he was armed both with a gun and with
so
a knife.
He had intent and he had the capability to do it. So he had the ideation and the means to accomplish his goal. And there was a policeman. On campus, who was part of the security on campus that was there, that stopped him. Okay, he gets 18 months plus, meaning time served.
Correct.
And he's already been in jail, I think they said, for nearly a year, right? So that just shows you. So the county attorney does this. Well, she goes to this Eastside town safety meeting late last week at, I presume, Councilman Cunningham's office on Ward 2.
It was actually at Ward 2.
And she publicly stated, and the news picked up, thank God they picked it up and reported it, she publicly stated that the reason she did this was because basically the police didn't do their job, they didn't Mirandize the guy, they didn't read him his rights, and so that the county attorney's office, in their opinion, had to dismiss a lot of evidence, including his confession of intent to shoot that, to shoot up the school. So at this point, Police Chief Chad Kazmar enters the chat and he says, now, wait a minute. So, we read him his rights twice and here's the body cam video of us reading him his rights before he confessed that this was his intent to shoot up a school.
It was not only the body cam to read his rights. It was almost the entire interview with the officer where he, the individual openly said, no, you know what? I do want to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
And I mean, he said some things, you know, like he's got a woman that looks just like him that comes to him in his dreams and tells him to do these. I mean, obviously we know anytime somebody's really considering an action like that, 99.9% of the times there's some serious mental issues going on. And so that's,
of course.
I understand. But to turn around, first off, and throw the TPD under the bus,
right?
You know, somebody's not telling the full truth here. Or, I mean, there can be a difference of interpretations.
Right.
But
now
but what's it
the
take?
Gauntlet has been laid down because she said it. She said it publicly in front of a large group of people. She said it publicly. The police department screwed up and they didn't do something right. Therefore, my hands were tied and I could not pursue this case more vigorously.
You can pursue and the case without that evidence if you really believe that evidence is disqualifying.
Again, Chad Casmore enters the chat and says, wait a minute, that's not the case. Well, this is one, to the average viewer, this is one case, this is one instance. For Chad Casmore, it's like, this is like the straw that broke the camel's back. Right. And finally, he says, wait a minute. You know, he sees all these lenient plea deals go through, all these times where the county attorney will not prosecute what the police are doing to slow down and stop crime in the community. And so finally, he said, this is enough. And he spoke up. Yeah. And good on him.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be.
And one of them's wrong. Right. One of them's in the wrong here. And my money is on Chad that he's right.
Well, Chad, I think somebody who's highly respected in the community that's always been forthcoming and truthful about what he's doing. He's gotten criticism for it
sure.
because people are saying, oh, you should be focused on arrests, on getting people. And he's going, we've got manpower issues, and the manpower issues mean there's only certain things we can do. And if we know we're going to do taking actions that aren't going to get prosecuted, my officers aren't, you know, dumb. They know they're going to waste 3 or 4 hours writing up the paperwork. I mean, on this show, he said 50% of the people that they arrest for fentanyl possession actually get charged.
Yeah.
What's it going to take in this community? We've talked about this a lot. What's it going to take? What if that shooter or that individual had been successful at shooting at the school? Is it got to go that far? We hear all the time. Just heard another incident where a young man was killed. Apparently, the person who shot him had been involved in two previous shootings and was out on pretrial services waiting trial. It comes to the safety of this community. I don't know how far we're going to have to go. And who does the county attorney answer to? The answer will probably be to the voters, but that's not true. In this town, you answer to the primary voters. It's mm-hmm. There are issues with both the election, with the people willing to run, the campaigns. I mean, it is what it is in that respect. But the county attorney, I've got to reach out to her and see if she's willing to come on. And if she does, we'll be very professional, as we always are with everybody we interview. But I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. There's so much leniency. Are we short on county attorneys and we don't have prosecutors?
They're short. They have 80 vacancies.
Yeah.
As of the August vacancy report from the county. 80 vacancies. It's 1 in 5. We got a 20% vacancy rate on employees in the Pima County Attorney's Office.
Yeah.
So... the other thing that came up in the news was this, the city's going to do some sort of a safe sleeping place. It's up on Grant Road.
It looks like they're going to open with 25. It's called Star Village.
Yeah, Star Village.
And they're looking at 25 initially, going to start with 25, hope to expand it, but they don't want to rush it. Women mm-hmm. and non-binary individuals to be there. They're going to have 3 people overnight, apparently.
Yeah.
Obviously, once we see it, we'll know more about it. But how do you determine who gets to stay? How do you, I'm all for improving the housing. We're doing it on public land.
How are you going to keep drugs out? Are they going to enforce that? And let me tell you this. The kicker of the story was, well, we're going to get nonprofits to manage the place. Well, I just would like to remind people, because the media won't, so we may as well do it here. Two words, Splinter Collective. Splinter Collective was given tens of thousands of dollars to manage a homeless encampment at Estevan Park downtown, which turned into a huge, huge drug place. And finally, the only reason they did anything about it is because the railroad, who, if you want to see an organization that has a lot of attorneys and a lot of clout.
Oh, it's the railroad.
It's the railroad.
It's the railroad.
And they said, look, these people are breaking through the fence and trespassing on our property and damaging it. And that's the only reason Estevan Park ever got closed down. But that was a nonprofit that they gave, the city gave money to, quote, manage this.
So here's the one interesting thing in the article, because the nonprofits that they say are going to be working together are Primavera, Old Pueblo Community Services, La Frontera, and Gospel Rescue Mission.
Well,
now,
good.
Gospel Rescue Mission is one that they claim is too high barrier. Well, I'm glad to see Gospel Rescue Mission's involved in that.
I'm glad that you pointed that out.
That was council
and
member
Primavera.
Ulick,
they do go
and Primavera.
Too.
So we've got folks that want to make a difference there. The proof will be in the pudding.
The proof will be in the pudding, indeed.
And we'll see how it goes. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This is The Morning Voice. That was Matt Neely. I'm Ted Maxwell, and we'll be back after the break with Mayor Joe Winfield, the current board chair for the Pima RTA. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, and here on Civic Engagement Tuesdays, the purpose of our show is to encourage you to get involved. We are our nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality, and with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and others, service to the community. Figure out what means something to you and get involved to make the towns and the communities we live in a better place. That's the bottom line. And right now, I am honored to have my mayor, as an Oro Valley resident, my mayor, Joe Winfield, join us on the show. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ted. Thank you for the invitation to join you and your audience this morning.
Well, absolutely. I greatly appreciate it, and I can't think of anybody better to kind of talk about how they got involved and why they are committed to serve. I know you've had I've had you on the show before, but I would just like you to start, Joe, with just taking a couple minutes just to tell us how you decided to get involved in politics and why you decided to run, and now you're on your second term as the mayor of the town of Oro Valley.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I like to think of myself, Ted, as a community-oriented person. And when you say get involved in politics, I think of it more of being involved in my community. And being involved in the community is something that's been important to me throughout my life, wherever I've lived. Admittedly, this is my first experience in elected office. But because of my work as a landscape architect, working for the federal government, the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, over the course of a 35-year career, I worked with a variety of elected officials at all levels of government, local, county, state, federal. And I found that these men and women all shared a common desire, just a sincere interest in their community and making the world a better place. I also found that they were just people like you and I. And so Marianne and I, when we came to Oro Valley in 1996, we had kind of crisscrossed the country with different job opportunities. We knew that this would be our home for the foreseeable future. Our children, our oldest child at the time was a sophomore in high school. Our youngest child had not yet been born. And so this is essentially where we've raised our family. And so because of my work, I've especially had an interest in parks and recreation. And I thought that I could make a difference in that regards. And also because elected officials are so much involved in community planning and really community building, I didn't think it hurt that I could read a blueprint. So.
Well, that's definitely helped, and you've accomplished a lot, especially in the park space. But what I want to talk about now is the other role. As the mayor of Oro Valley, you also are a member of the Pima Association of Governments, as well as the Pima County Regional Transportation Authority. And
yes.
And you're currently serving as the chair and have been so for the last 8 months now. And just yesterday, you had the opportunity to sign the document that will actually forward to the ballot an RTA Next Plan. So it will be the first chance for the voters of Pima County to decide if they want to continue using a regional transportation approach. But that wasn't necessarily an easy lift because the person who was chair right before you didn't get it across the finish line.
Well, that's true, Ted, but certainly paved the way to help us reach this milestone that we were able to accomplish yesterday. And as you know, it's been a challenging path to get to where we got to. I've always held a belief that we would be successful. Admittedly, there were moments during this journey when that maybe seemed out of reach, but it doesn't hurt to have a deadline. And fortunately, some things fell into place in terms of some key personnel, especially with the departure of our past executive director and the resignation of our legal counsel. But the hiring of Mike Ortega, the hiring of Lisa Ann and her firm, the staff rallying around this new executive director, the board certainly stepping up and working together and making themselves available for a number of meetings here in the past few months that we weren't typically doing. So with everybody coming together, we're going to be able to bring a proposal to our community in March for the voters to make a decision.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the number of meetings that have been occurring, and it hasn't just been the board. The board's been meeting more frequently. We met four times in the last 2 months, but the technical management committee, which is made up of, you know, the county administrator, as well as most of all of the town and city managers, departments of transportation in some of those communities that have them, and some other regional transportation experts, they were meeting twice a week for the last several weeks. So I've got to make sure people understand the work those folks put in was just phenomenal.
Absolutely, Ted. And I appreciate you highlighting that, because their work, of course, was critical. And as you say, they've been meeting, I think, even up to three times a week at times to help bring this proposal to the board for their dialogue and eventual agreement to bring it to the voters. So a lot of folks have helped to make this happen.
So we've talked quite a bit about it as the plan was going forward. And you always asked me, you know, what is it that's in for the Oro Valley voter? So I'm going to turn that question on you. What do you, with the final product and what you saw going forward, what do you believe either some of the changes at the end, or what is it that you see for the voters in Oro Valley that, or for you as the mayor, that you like, that this is going to provide our community?
Well, as you know, we had a brief conversation, you and I did yesterday, and I think one of the key things, Ted, is that, of course, each of us represent our various jurisdictions, but we're, as members of the Regional Transportation Authority, when we walk into that room, I think it's important that we leave our, in a sense, our jurisdiction at the doorway, and we come together to work collaboratively for the benefit of the region. And when I think of the residents of Oro Valley, we have approximately 13,000 folks daily leave Oro Valley to travel to Marana, Sarita, Tucson, unincorporated Pima County for employment, school, for any number of reasons. And so one of the benefits that I see for the residents of Oro Valley is an improvement of transportation overall for the region, whether that's new roadways or the improvement of existing roadways for arterial reconstruction, for those that take advantage of the transit. There will be that available to folks. And of course, we have a Dial-A-Ride here in the town of Oro Valley that has been critical for many of our citizens. And we've seen increased ridership year after year that's been in place. So there are some specific projects in this plan for the town of Oro Valley. There's a piece of Shannon from Lambert to Tangerine that will be improved significantly with three lanes, multi-use path, sidewalks, so on and so forth. And then from Lambert, about midway between La Cañada and La Cholla, improvements will begin going west to Thornydale. So those will be two additional improvements that will certainly enhance and provide better access to the west and just better circulation to the north and south. Those will connect with improvements on Thornydale. Of course, Tangerine will be upgraded up to I-10. The Tangerine interchange will also be improved, and that will certainly be a benefit to our residents who travel to Phoenix or to Sky Harbor or anywhere going north and even to the south. So there's multiple benefits for the residents of Oro Valley. In addition to that, what has been important, and this may not be fully appreciated by our residents, and that is the uncoupling of the monies that come to the Pima Association of Governments for other jurisdictional improvements. And so those can be signals, intersection improvements, safety improvements, and roadway improvements for that matter. And so those monies, which have been tied, have been supplementing RTA because of the shortfall in revenue for a number of years, we'll finally see that come to an end in 2031.
And Mayor Winfield, I think you just did a great job of describing not only the projects that are in it, but that last piece I think was so critically important, because over the 5 years I've been on that board, I've heard there hasn't been any of that PAG regional money available to the municipalities. And I've heard from many of you around the table the importance of that, because that provides flexibility, that provides real-time moderation. What we're talking about is a 20-year plan. We don't need every penny that's coming to the region going to that 20-year plan. We need to make the best use of the money that the 20-year plan brings. So I think that was a huge point, and I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah.
And Mayor, can you stay with us for about 10 more minutes?
You bet.
All right.
Thank you.
I know you've got a speaking engagement this morning, and we'll make sure we get you off there in time. That's the voice of Mayor Joe Winfield, the mayor of the town of Oro Valley and the current chair of the Pima County Regional Transportation Authority. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. And with me is Mayor Joe Winfield, the mayor of the town of Oro Valley, my hometown. And Mayor, one thing that we're proud of up in Oro Valley is being a safe community for families and for all of our residents. And the boards take, or the mayor and council have taken a couple actions on continuing to demonstrate that as our priority with the purchase of a new facility for a new Oro Valley PD headquarters, as well as a court expansion. Can you talk about those just a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the police headquarters has, as I understand it, was basically had been outgrown from about the time that it opened its doors. So the need for a new headquarters has been on the docket for as long as I've served as mayor. We were, we've had our eye on an existing building that has been vacant for a few years that is, was owned by the Northwest Hospital Group. And through a third party, we've had negotiations for the purchase of that building, which is just north of the Rancho Vistoso on Oracle, behind Harbor Freight. And we just approved the acquisition of that building that was built in the early 2000s and has, like I said, been vacant for a few years. A purchase of $3.8 million. And we're really thrilled with that purchase. It's going to provide opportunity for the growth of the department for really decades to come. And it will save, of course, the community substantially. Now, it's not a turnkey operation by any means. There's investment that will be made into the building, but the benefit is that that can be done and doesn't have to be done all at once. It can be done incrementally and budgeted over time. So we're excited about that. The department, the police department, is looking forward to bringing that building online. We've also, similar with our court building, it was really needing some refreshment and to be expanded. It was didn't serve the needs of our judge and the staff. And so that's a project that will be completed sometime this fall. The majority of it is done. It's, again, been done in phases. Right now, the last part of that project is what's referred to as a Sully Port, and that's where they bring individuals that are going to be brought before the judge, where there has to be a higher security. And so that's under construction right at the moment. But there'll be an open house ribbon cutting sometime in the fall. So excited about both of those projects. And of course, public safety is, you know, it's our police department, it's our court, it's our prosecutors, and all three of those are really key to providing the degree of public safety to our community that Oro Valley is known for.
Well, Mayor, I know the community was very happy to hear about the court facility being developed, and then obviously you have to have prosecutors at that point, because it really gave weight to, if you come up to Oro Valley, there's repercussions. And so I think that was greatly appreciated. Real quickly, Roberta, a caller just called in, and she asked about Dial-A-Ride. So I know that that was a big concern for you when it came talking about transit. Some people think transit, they think SunTran and you know, the city of Tucson's operations, but there's a lot of it goes. Can you just real quick talk about the current Dial-A-Ride program and why that was an important piece in the RTA for you?
Well, so why that is, so it serves virtually, it serves all of our community. But it originally was the target audience were those that had mobility challenges, but it certainly has grown from that. It's not a fixed route service, so you do need to call and make a reservation. It does have a geographic area, so it's not it doesn't go everywhere. It goes everywhere in Oro Valley and many places outside of Oro Valley. But folks utilize it to take to transport them to doctor's appointments, to physical rehabilitation appointments. Some young people use it for getting to various functions that families have. So it's constrained by the reservation format, but it's open to all of our community to use that resource. So the Regional Transportation Authority has been an important funding source for that. We also provide funding, but it's about a $2 million enterprise to have that service to our community.
Well, I know that's an example of the leadership you've taken on the council, and that's representing your community and taking care of their needs. So I've got to let you go. I appreciate you taking the time this morning to be with us, Mayor Winfield, and best of luck this morning at your presentation and talk.
Thanks, Ted. Appreciate what you do and especially your leadership on the Regional Transportation Authority Board. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You have a great day. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I am Ted Maxwell, and I'm going to jump right in because I think we've only got our next guest for one segment, Congressman Juan Ciscomani, representing CD6. Appreciate you calling in today, Juan.
Of course, Ted. Glad to be talking to you, man. How you been?
Not too bad. How are you doing, and how is your arm and your boy's arm?
Yeah, so I had a scheduled surgery. It's been my elbow for, over a year and a half and needed to be done. We avoided it, try to avoid it because it's a simple surgery but long recovery. But anyway, that was scheduled for Thursday the 14th, and I went to one of his practices. He's playing football at South Point, and I saw him get up kind of weird from a tackle, and I immediately knew something was wrong. So he comes over, and he's like, "Daddy, I think I broke my wrist." I'm like, "No." And so we go to TMC. They took great care of us there. And broken wrist. So both of us in the same week, we're both right-handed, and both of our right hands were out. So we were two needy boys here.
I can only imagine the Laura and the rest of the family having to pitch in on that one for sure. But it made for some good, social media posts.
So, it was, we've been having a good time. Of course, the doctor is like, "Okay, you will be back in about 3 weeks," talking to my son. And then looks at me like, "You'll be back in about 4 months." So that's the advantage of young bones versus not so much. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully I think you got a lot of your activities. You've had this almost a month off at home, and that gave you the opportunity to go around. And just wanted to give you a chance to talk about some of the stuff you've gone around and talked about what's currently important with the message that you want to get back to the region.
Yeah, of course. Well, August is always, this is my third August, right? So we're getting more and more strategic about how to spend our time here and how to cover more ground when we're here. That has to do with being in front of media. It has to do with being in front of large audiences, but also just being out and about. And I'm back on the field coaching football again. So, being out there with new parents and new kids, new families, it's everything from that all the way up to hosting events. We held a roundtable to talk about the One Big Beautiful Bill that I know we'll discuss in a second here. But several cool ones, I think unique. I toured, just kind of like behind the scenes of QT. It's a growing company, and dealing with a lot of the retail theft that we're seeing all over town, specifically in the Tucson area. So that was a big one. The Tucson International Airport, I mean, there's some investment that needs there. So we saw that, especially in the new runway investment that we were able to secure for them in the last Congress. And how is that? It's being used on the same day. I went to the Arizona Tech Council, had a meeting with them as well. And then one of the other things was just covering the mining and rock products, right? I have a bill that makes copper a critical mineral. So we talked to them about that piece as well. Pharmacies, healthcare centers as well. Border, which has been a big topic on not only the Big Beautiful Bill, but just always. I led a letter to the director, just encouraged. We had a meeting, so encouraging him to invest the $64 million for border infrastructure here in Arizona. Also, I think you probably saw this, Ted, wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Air Force regarding the investment of a new space mission and how that has the potential to go to Fort Huachuca, which would be huge for national security, but definitely the community there as well. So we did that, schools, educators, toured the Marine operations in Sierra Vista, the CBP and Marine, Air Marine operations, and I always do, I went to go speak at one of the naturalization ceremonies as well, with new citizens joining us as citizens. And I love telling them, like, I know what you've gone through. And then they look at me kind of like, well, do you? And I'm like, no, literally 19 years ago.
Yeah.
It'll be my 19th anniversary as a U.S. citizen next month. So I take that very seriously, and I share it with them. So they had a great time. And then I visited J.B. Steele. I don't know if you've been to that company, but that was the day before my elbow surgery, and shaking hands with how fired up my elbow was so painful. Well, and then nothing fires her up more than go shake hands with a bunch of steel workers. That did it, you know, right before the surgery. So, man, I can go on, but on the round table for the One Big Beautiful Bill, I took questions from media for almost half an hour. So it's been great to just be out there talking about it and hearing the feedback from people.
Well, I think it's important. I know you've included some of the comments there about the Great Big Beautiful Bill. But I'm going to ask you a question. A mutual friend of ours who's a lifelong Democrat who's proudly voted for you both of the last two elections, you know, they're just little concerned about the vote on the Big Beautiful Bill because they totally understand the need to reduce government spending, even on programs that they support because of the budget deficit. And the troubling part is just the increase in the deficit. And you've spoken many times about your belief that we've got to do something about the deficit. Can you talk about how that kind of played into your decision to support the bill?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when you look at first of all, you got to look at the deficit and how we got here, right? This is over decades of misspending by Washington. Just Washington has been having a spending spree under both parties, Republicans, Democrats, both presidents, Congresses from all over. And the deficit has been going up and up and up. And then you have COVID, then the spending just drastically increases. And you've had these points that, yeah, spending goes way up, but the trajectory of spending has continued to go up this entire time. And then the border situation cost us hundreds of billions of dollars. People that were seeking asylum were getting more money than people getting on Social Security after working 40 years of their life here. So there's a lot of that going on, misspending, throwing money at this thing. Again, I'm not – right now it's not the moment to point the finger to one side or the other. You know how I feel about this, but we'll just say Washington has been doing that, and they have. So here we are. We run for office saying we got to get this under control. Well, getting under control means we have to cut spending. That's just – there's no way around it. We're having a lot of revenue and historic amount of revenue. However, the spending has also been going up. And you're right, people, I'm an appropriator. So over 90% of the meetings that I take, most of the time people come here because they want to see me and they want something funded or it's about money, right? And you're right, Ted. Everybody agrees that we should cut. Everybody agrees that we should reduce spending. But also everybody finishes up that sentence by saying, but just not my area. Well, you know,
absolutely.
It's going to take a while to get out of this hole of the deficit. Spending is fun. Washington has been having a lot of fun for the last few decades. Cutting and making sure that we have to fit into a budget, that's never the fun part of any household. It's not, let's say, the easiest also or the most comfortable to do here because you have to make decisions that are going to be tough. But we all ran on that agenda of making sure that we do that. So how do we do that? Well, we have to spur and continue to grow the economic growth in the country. And the One Big Beautiful Bill does that. It cuts in different areas of misspending, and it also encourages economic growth through not taxing our workers on their tips or our seniors up to $6,000 on their Social Security. I mean, there's a lot in here. And when I say a lot, it's an understatement. There's a good chunk of things that will spur that. For small businesses, more tax write-offs for them. I mean, the list goes on and what the One Big Beautiful Bill will do. But that's only one piece of it. This is not going to happen with just one piece of legislation. One legislation didn't get us to this deficit. It was a lifestyle of Washington of where this got us. So to get out of this, we're going to have to do this through the One Big Beautiful Bill. There's possibly another reconciliation bill coming through as well that will deal with things that we weren't able to get on the first one. We have the appropriations process that I'm involved in. Every area is getting a reduction in spending, except veterans, homeland security, and defense. And then we also have rescission packages that we're looking at in terms of where has money been appropriated in the past that it was just like a stamp of approval with no real accountability. That now we got to look into it and see where the money is going. And if it's not being spent properly, then we got to look what we can do. So this is going to take an all of the above approach, and it's also going to take up a while. you know, we didn't get here in 2 years. So I've been here for 2.5 years, and I've been true to this. And you're right. Some people have been critical of how we're reducing the size of government. But this is what I ran on. This is how this district elected me. And that's what I'm delivering on.
Well, you kind of led into the follow-on question, too. When you go back now, what are you going to be stepping into? Does the appropriation process, has it already begun? Are you now looking at already working on next year's bill? What is the next step, and how are you going to continue to deliver for this region?
Yeah, no, great question. So when we go back, and we go back next week, it's for me at least, it's going to be mainly about the budget. We're still in the middle of the appropriations process. The fiscal year ends on September 30th, so we have to pass something before midnight on September 30th, or else we go into a shutdown. So the shutdown is not ideal. A CR is not ideal. But with the way that the appropriations process has been going, we still have, out of the 12 bills, 3 to do. We already passed 2 out of the House, but we, you know, we're behind. The House is behind, and the Senate is even further behind. So I don't see this getting done by the deadline. So we're probably going to be looking at a short term CR to be able to keep the lights on, and then really continue the battle of the budget. There's a lot of discussion on this, just like there is at home, of people, again, some wanting to actually spend more, others want to cut into programs that are actually necessary at this point. So we have to find the right balance here and pass the right budget out of the House. I don't like CRs, but I like shutdowns even less. So this is where we're heading when we get back. We got 3 weeks to figure that out.
Well, I appreciate that, Congressman. I know what you said there at the end was important. You aren't a fan of CRs, but they're still better than shutdowns. I know you've got to go to another obligation. I appreciate you taking the time with us this morning and answering those questions that we've got. And I always look forward to getting you back. And please take the time, get healed. Don't throw that football for a while. And
No, we won't be doing that. I've become kind of proficient with my left throwing and even writing a little bit. But I would like to, talk to you again, Ted, because this weekend I'm hosting a group of bipartisan members. I'm part of the Problem Solvers Caucus. And I'm hosting a group of bipartisan members at the border so they can see the difference of what has happened, where we are today, the investments still necessary. So I'll be doing that this weekend. We'd love to talk to you about how that went. Again, Democrats, Republicans coming down to see this from across the country. So I've been a voice of leadership on this issue and been able to convene them here in Arizona. It's important for them to see this border because it's so different than the Texas and the California ones. So anyway, I'd love to talk to you about that next time we chat.
All right, Congressman Juan Ciscomani, thank you for joining us. I will definitely reach out to your team and get you back on. Hopefully we can grab you for 30 minutes next time and get a little bit more in depth in this, but I appreciate you taking the time with us today. Travel safe and best of luck when you get back to D.C.
You got it, brother. See you.
All right, take care. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be back.
50th anniversary of Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run album. Meeting across the river.
Gotta love it, Matt. I almost feel like we could, just do a little competition with The Drive and some of the other great radio shows on the this morning. But
that's right.
But it's definitely making it good for me. So I'm Ted Maxwell. I'm your host. This is The Morning Voice. That's Matt Neely behind the glass. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, 5 different voices. A little bit of politics amongst all of us and a little bit more politics amongst some of us. So when we get back from the bottom of the hour, I'll be bringing in Tim Tamir, the city manager of the town of, or the city of mm-hmm. Tucson. Tucson's definitely not a town. Tomorrow, if you tune in and listen to Grant Kruger with Food for Thought on the Morning Voice Wednesdays, he's going to have Greg Pemberton, the chairman of the D.C. Police Union, on with him. And he's also going to have Kristen Garcia Hernandez, the CEO of the Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona. So, as you know, Grant brings it and brings it strong every Wednesday morning. So, please tune in and join him tomorrow. So it was great an opportunity to have a quick conversation with Congressman Juan Ciscomani. So much more to delve into. Matt, it was something we were talking off the air too. People, that approach side of it, his role as a congressman on the Appropriations Committee, where you have to enter a negotiation. You have to get yourself to a solution. You have to get yourself to a budget or a series of budgets, and then you have to support them. And it puts him even inside of Congress sometimes on that area where he's going to be. Other congressmen are going to criticize him. Some of them, I think one of the biggest problems we have in D.C. now still exists in the congressmen are there that they're just there to make sure they're getting reelected for their sound bites. I mean, I've heard Congressman Schweiker talk about it. I've heard other congressmen talk about it, that some of the representatives there, it's about the cameras. It's about getting their face out there, ensuring that they are able to go back to their districts, which predominantly are either so far right or so far left that they're both covered. Yeah. So that kind of brings us into a conversation of the infamous word gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter for everybody,
not a hot word in the
by definition, right, gerrymandering is accomplished every time anybody, whether it's an independent committee like we have in Arizona, or it's a state legislature, when they redraw the lines, by definition, you're drawing them to achieve some kind of outcome, mm-hmm. whether it's the Voter Protection Act, which ensures minority-majority districts.
Such as CD7.
Such as CD7. Or if you're trying to make a competitive district, then you're trying to gerrymander it so that the numbers are close.
CD6.
Gerrymandering is such a word.
Ask Juan and David Schweikert about balanced districts.
Oh,
about
no,
swing
absolutely,
districts.
Absolutely. And then, perfect example. You bring it up here in the state of Arizona. We have 9 congressional districts. 2 of them, are competitive.
Yeah,
you know, David Schweikert, Congressman Schweikert, and Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Both Republicans are right now carrying those 2 competitive districts.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them are more or less decided in the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than less, because you look at CD7. You know, Mr. Gutierrez is out there running a campaign to try to win, but he's facing a 32% deficit the day he starts because of the way the districts in Arizona were drawn. And as you know, Matt, they're drawn by an independent committee, 5 members.
I'll do the air quotes around
Thank
independent.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't know if you're
too nice
to,
but I will. I'll be the ugly person.
And what it really comes down to on that one is it comes down to the independent member on that committee. For those of you who may not understand how it goes, a lot of press.
Which side gets their independent member this time?
It is. A lot of press right now around what's going on in Texas, the redrawing there, where by law it is the state legislatures that redraw the maps.
Yeah,
And they were asked to increase 5 seats, and they found to do. Now they had to. That meant some of the districts were going to be a little more competitive, but there's now 5 more Republican-leaning seats in Texas. California Governor Newsom said he's going to go to the ballot to let the voters decide if they want to redraw their lines because mm-hmm. it's out of their normal 10-year cycle. And normally California's got an independent, I don't know what makes up the folks that are selected that, but it's not done by the legislature. They're trying to change that rule right now to counter Texas. So it's how we'd redraw our districts has become really popular. I mean, a popular discussion because it is questionable, for in some people's minds. And in Arizona, we've got 2 Democrats are elected to the panel. Well, there's actually an independent committee, the Independent Judicial Court Appointments the committee that selects it, made up of citizens. They give a series of names, both on the Democratic and the Republican side, and recommendations and independent side to the leadership in the state legislature.
Right.
Because the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate,
mm-hmm.
they get to make a choice, as does the Minority Leader in the House, the Minority Leader in the Senate.
Okay.
So those 4, like you said, are independent.
Right.
Well, they're chosen by the parties to represent them.
Yeah.
And historically, other than our first year, and the first year we did it was in 2000, and a local Tucsonan, Steve Lynn, was the
sure.
was the
that.
Independent, mm-hmm. and they're he'd set out and said, I'm going to insist on, you know, unanimous maps. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time. So they went in, they kind of hadn't figured out the game, and it came out pretty more balanced, I'd say, probably leaning a little bit right with the makeup. 2010 came along, and every vote broke the other way.
Mm-hmm.
The independent mm-hmm. was much more
Colleen
aligned.
Mathis,
Colleen Mathis.
It? Yeah.
And she was much more aligned with the Democratic members of the independent committee. And then this last time in 2020, everything swung the other way. The independent was more aligned with the Republicans. Interesting, having talked to her after it was over, her justification was just because she felt the Republicans were more willing to move some of the districts around. But what did it result in? It resulted in not only the congressional seats, but it also resulted in the state seats being a little bit more
sure
right than they thought they would be. Now, the challenge for everybody in our state, guess what? That's what we've got for 10 years. I don't know if there's a good solution on how to fix it. You know, some people have suggested make it 3-3-3, kind of like our voter makeup. So three Republicans, three Democrats, and three independents.
Uh-huh.
But ultimately, politics will always be involved in this, and it makes it a challenge.
Yeah.
I still think we've got one of the best countries in the world when it comes to how we elect our officials. We just need to get them to remember that they represent us.
Sounds good to me. Hey, look, you're talking to a guy who's so rooted in the past. I didn't even like the 17th Amendment. I think the legislature should appoint the senators. So,
well, that's
maybe the wrong guy to ask about progressive ideas.
That's actually a completely different discussion and one that's got merit. So one of these days, Matt, we'll go down that rabbit hole. So stay with us. We'll have City Manager Tim Tamir with us when we come right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk.
Celebrating the 50th anniversary of Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run album on The Morning Voice.
And I appreciate the boss in the background. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. That's Matt Neely, the 50th anniversary of Bruce Springsteen. And it's been a fun morning. The fun thing on Jungleland, though, since you brought that one up, that to me is one of the all-time greatest songs, and so much of it's because just to how it builds. It's nice. I mean, it's got piano, it's got talk, it's got a story to it if you listen to it, and you
sure.
And then it turns the rock up there later in the song. So it's truly
absolutely.
It's a long
a rock
song.
Opera. Yes,
9 minutes and 35 seconds on the version you've got called up. So that tells you a little bit about it, but it is great in that front. So we had the honor of having Congressman Juan Ciscomani on for a quick segment. There's so much more that we can follow up with him on at later dates, so we'll be trying to get him back soon. And earlier in the show, we had Mayor Joe Winfield, who spent some time talking about the RTA. I'm very honored right now to have City Manager Tim Tamir from the City of Tucson. Tim, thank you for joining us, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely, Tim. To say that the last couple months, not that the city manager's job's ever mundane or slow, but the last couple months for you have truly been something to watch. It's been, I don't want to say chaotic, because everything that's been you've been working towards has had a purpose, and I think the RTA is a big one, and obviously Project Blue is a big conversation, but it took a lot of your time, effort, and you were out in the public eye a lot, and I appreciate all you're doing to try to move things forward. So I just wanted to start by telling you thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate the comments, and it's been quite the summer, and normally you kind of look forward to a little opportunity to reset, recharge, and tackle things anew, but this was not the summer for that. This was the summer for old business.
Well, that is absolutely the case. I don't want to dwell a lot on Project Blue, but I do want to give you an opportunity to kind of talk about your reflections on it, on the process, on the public hearings, on the role that you played in trying to keep that going through. And I'll follow it up with a very specific water question, but I just want to hear your thoughts.
Sure. I mean, Project Blue is an example of an idea that comes to the city, and we're charged with evaluating ideas and proposals and try to put together information for the mayor and council. And we were constrained in two kind of major ways. One is the NDAs on this particular project constrained data sharing until way too late in the game. And that's not fair to the council, to the public, to basically anybody to have a pretty meaningful conversation when there's a big old vacuum of information. And it got filled both by misinformation and mistrust. And that certainly contributed to the nature of the conversation. Now, the ultimate decision still, you know, needed to be based on what's best for the city, and that's how mayor and council evaluated it. But the other constraint that hit, I think, Project Blue and that particular experience with it was there was an initiating action that had to come from the county, and that happened, and it happened right before we took 6 weeks off of having any formal or public conversation with the mayor and council. So we had this extended time period where the mayor and council were not in a position to weigh in, were not in a position to opine, and others were. And I think that conversation could have been quite different if we'd have been able to have, I don't know that the outcome would have been different. I'm not even advocating for a different outcome. What I'm saying is the lack of public information to begin with, and then the lack of a public dialogue other than in those town halls was that was a challenge.
Well, there's no doubt the NDAs play an impact on that. And in my role at SALC, we are not involved directly with any of the economic development, particularly when it comes to site selectors, the companies on the outside. That is something that the Chamber of Southern Arizona is solely, that's in their focus and their talent, skills, and base, and what they try to do. And it you're right, it created problems when anytime there's a lack of anything, somebody will fill the void. And I think there was a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of folks that didn't know the information, but it's like you said, if you don't have clear communications, it's going to get filled.
That's I think one of the top lessons from our Project Blue experience. And the other side of it is that particular deal for Project Blue, which would have involved annexation to the city and all the things that came along with it, that ending is not the end of Project Blue. So I think our community is still going to have to wrestle with what next for Project Blue, because it still lives. And on the, you know, within the city of Tucson, because we've been pretty clear about what our next steps are. We're going to be putting together the first of all, we already have a large water users ordinance on the books. That's going to get refined over the next 6 months with significant public involvement. And then we have the whole land use and zoning and all of the guardrails and rules of the game for data centers in Tucson that'll be playing out over through the fall. So Project Blue is dead in the city, but not dead overall. And the conversation still has to continue.
Yeah, we'll come back to that side of it shortly here. But I want to, when I first met you, Tim, was when you were the director of Tucson Water. And you did some yeoman's work there, especially when it came to the DCP and some other issues looking for solutions. What I wanted to ask you about is the one word that got everybody riled up was water positivity.
That is that's true, and it's the most regrettable part of the conversation is we didn't actually have a conversation around that. There are folks that either choose not to believe it's possible or had yet to engage in a conversation enough to understand how it possibly could work in Tucson. And the downside of that isn't about Project Blue. The downside of that is it is a potential path for economic development in Tucson, where Tucson's water resources are fully protected. And the water resources that all Tucsons count on, that all Tucsons are counting on for their children, their grandchildren, are protected. And there are ways to demonstrate it. There are ways to have outside third-party verification on it. There are ways to do a lot of really significant and impactful things in that water positivity space. We had a really hard launch and a really bad conversation around it, and so we're still going to have to pivot from that, because that is a part of the future. Is how do we continue Tucson's leadership in water stewardship, and sometimes that comes with new ideas that are difficult to grasp until we can actually sit down and calmly talk about it.
And I think now, Tim's the time and opportunity, and amongst the business organizations, but more importantly amongst the public, to really explain why water positivity is a thing and it's viable. Yes, sometimes it involves paper water, but paper water in Arizona is water. So people have to, there's a lot that goes into it, a much bigger discussion than what we have today. So you mentioned the fact that Project Blue's not going away. And just yesterday, they made an announcement that at the Arizona Corporation Commission, TEP's filed to be able to deliver and start putting in the capacity that might be needed for Project Blue to actually get built on the exact same piece of property that the city voted not to annex and therefore gave up the rights. I saw a couple emails or not emails, really social media posts, Rocky Perez, some others that were out there letting people know that, hey, Tucson still got to try to stand up and work within the county. But the fact of the matter is, you said it earlier, Project Blue's dead in the city of Tucson, but not necessarily elsewhere. One of the questions we had somebody just posed on our chat is, will the large water user ordinance apply if the data center goes onto that piece of land?
The large water user ordinance will only apply if the water service is provided by Tucson Water. So it applies inside the city and outside the city, but only when Tucson Water is the water provider. And in this case, Tucson Water would not be the water provider.
Perfect. That, I think, answers that question head on. I think the other thing that a lot of the proponents for Project Blue were excited about was the idea that you could get the reclaimed water pipeline to part of the city and part of the county that really doesn't have access to the use of reclaimed water, which I've said quite often, reclaimed water is a large part of our future and what we do with it. Do you see the city trying to prioritize getting that done, or do you see that even as a possibility to get that, you know, pipe, that blue purple pipe to that area of the community, including other areas of the city?
It's been on the city's long range plan to get what we call a Southlands loop of the pipeline. The fact of the matter is, we don't have the funding for that. And if we were to build that, the funding of over $100 million, and actually to finish the loop, you know, you're looking at $150 million or so of total infrastructure. To put that cost into the reclaimed water rate base without, an end-use customer, a fairly significant customer, it would blow the rates out of the water. So there's a line on a map, and we've actually gotten a federal authorization for it through Water Resources Development Act. I think it was 2024. Or 2022. So we actually have a federal authorization, but not an appropriation. And, you know, the path to getting an appropriation is long and varied and difficult. So I would say not for at least a decade or two at the earliest, if we don't have a large user to help anchor that.
So one last question, if you've got any insight, if Tucson Water is not the provider out there, are there many options for Project Blue to look at on that piece of property?
At this point, from what I know, there's at least two or three options that they could get water service for that site. And depending on other sites they may be looking at, there's at least a half dozen different opportunities.
Well, I greatly appreciate that insight into Project Blue, and I know your water stewardship is bar none. You are very passionate about that, and I know in your role as the city manager, you'll continue to manage the water for Tucson. So Tucson should be confident in having you in that seat taking care of that. We're going to go to break now, Tim. I'd like you to come back, and we'll talk about some of the big news this week, and that's a RTA next that looks like it will be going to the ballot in March.
Sounds good.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Well, Ted, we made it through the album today.
We did, and I appreciate that, Matt. We might have to visit some more Bruce in the future as well.
That's all right.
So my guest right now is Tim Tamir, the city manager for the city of Tucson. Tim, are you a Springsteen fan?
I like more than I dislike Bruce Springsteen. He's been a part of my musical experience my whole life, and I'm not a huge Bruce fan, but there's quite a few of his songs that I like.
Okay, I can accept them. Accept that as a
the
good
judges
answer.
Will
good
accept
answer.
That one.
Well, the judges will take that one. So right out of the fire from Project Blue into RTA, it's not really like being in the fire. We had been, as you know, and you've been part of this for years, trying to get to a solution that we could get to. But I do want to commend your team, Sam Credio, Kristen Swallow, you, the technical management committee did such a large lift on this. It was really incredible. What makes...
Go ahead, Tim. I was going to say, it was jumping from being in the fire into the mud for a little bit there, but I think appreciate your comments, and it was I think we got to a good outcome. It's there's a long road ahead, but the RTA Next, some things shifted over the last year that made it possible.
Well, there's no doubt. We've talked about the leadership change. You've heard that from Joe Winfield this morning earlier on the show. The move to Michael Ortega and to new legal counsel made a difference, and I think it really just took away some long-held roadblocks that were put in place. People had sunk into their positions, and there wasn't as much willingness to try to work together, because there was a lot of give and take amongst all the members in that last 3 or 4 weeks to get to a point where I think Mayor Romero summed it up at the August 15th meeting really well when she said, this current plan is by far the best plan we've had on the table. And Joe Winfield reiterated that this morning. I think that was kind of a consensus of all the elected officials around the table was, is it perfect? No. Can we make it much better? Probably not, because we're going to improve for some and it will hurt other support. But I think we're in a position that we can go forward. What do you think were some of the most important things in this final push that, for you, representing the city and the region as a whole, from that regional perspective, pushed it over the top?
I do think the leadership change was a fundamental part of that. And it's not necessarily about the individuals themselves. It was about the nature of the conversations that took place.
That's a good way to put it. That's true.
Yeah. We shifted from where information was constrained and not necessarily even trusted to where the books were just laid wide open, which also allowed RTA and PAG staff to kind of start evolve their relationship with the jurisdictions who deliver most of the projects. And so I think that kind of easing of information, but also kind of a total reset of the relationship of RTA to the region, helped make it more of a place where conversations could happen, and people gradually was a matter of like probably two meetings were able to put their guards down and really share, I don't want to say their bottom line, but share their core values. And even at the last minute, Town of Marana came forward with some significant changes within what their priorities were. The dollars didn't shift. The dollars shifted some, which helped the overall program come to a good landing spot, but they actually flipped something that wasn't even necessarily on the table to be their number one. But everybody looked at it through Marana's eyes and said, from your perspective and from within your benefits that your community needs, this is your number one. I'm going to support you on that. And that translated back from Matt Marana to others, and the city was really strong on arterial rehabilitation and transit. And we actually shifted significant emphasis within the plan, within the bones of it, the structure of it was there. It's just that we moved things around in ways that made everybody happier, and everybody felt like, I'm representing my constituents better, and the region will be better off. So, it's not a done deal, but the deal that's going to the voters is tremendously better than what we were at 8 months ago.
And we've only got about 30 seconds, but real quick, that arterial rehabilitation piece is new to this plan. And I feel strongly it is one that a lot of that money is going to be spent in the city of Tucson, but it benefits everyone who ever comes in the city of Tucson, which is the majority of the county.
I couldn't agree more. We a lot of commerce happens here, a lot of entertainment, and a lot of people work and live in different places, so they get around in a variety of ways. Having a good, safe roadways and other modes of transportation available to people is going to make a big difference.
Well, Tim, I appreciate all your leadership through all these. I thought you did a remarkable job being the face on some difficult issues over the last couple months, and look forward to having you back to talk more about what's going on in the city and RTA next.
Thank you, and thank you for your leadership for our community and also for the incredible work you did to bring RTA Next to the voters.
Thank you for joining us today on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Stay around for When Tucson to follow.